Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, what makes humans musical? Why do we sing together? Why do we match pitch and instinctively move to a beat? Well, scientists have assumed those abilities were uniquely human. But what if the roots of music run much deeper in the animal kingdom? New research exploring how dogs howl along to music suggests that the urge to adjust our voices and join in with others may have ancient evolutionary origins. So suggests Dr. Ani Patel. He is Professor of Psychology at Tufts University in Massachusetts, and he's been looking into this. He joins me now. Ani, welcome to the programme. This is an unusual way to be looking at the origins of music through dogs. Tell me a little bit about why you did this experiment and what exactly you did.
Yes, you're right. We don't typically think of dogs as the most musical of creatures. Well, we did this experiment because we were interested in the origins of humans' ability and desire to sing along with others and adjust our pitch in relationship to others, which is what we see all over the world. And whether that had some sort of functional roots that might even predate speech, for example. That's been one speculation, that somehow music predated language. That's an idea that goes back to Darwin. And so we wanted to see if it was possible that there were other animals that also vocalized and produced sort of song-like sounds together in groups for social reasons and actually adjusted their pitches in relationship to each other. And especially animals that don't have the ability to imitate complex sounds or the kind of sophisticated things that might lead to be associated with a speech-like capacity. And we got interested in an observation that biologists made, that wolves, when they howl together, actually do listen to each other and adjust their pitches for functional reasons. For example, they might want to sound like a larger pack to advertise their territory to another pack. And so they listen and actually detune their pitches from each other. Or if they're trying to reunite their pack, they might kind of align their pitches with each other. And we thought, wow, okay, there may be other animals that have that capacity and have it for functional reasons, and making it plausible that perhaps we had something like that too. But can you actually prove that animals are doing that? It's very difficult to do that with wolves in the wild, as you can imagine.
Mm.
But
probably quite dangerous too, I'd imagine.
Yes, and dangerous, right. But we can take advantage of the fact that dogs will sometimes howl to specific sounds that they, presumably because they hear something or they perceive something howl-like in the sound, and so they have this urge to join in. And this is well known. You get plenty of internet videos of dogs howling along to music or other sounds. And we thought we could maybe leverage this for a citizen science experiment. And so it was a collaboration between my lab and the Canine Brain Lab at Harvard University. And we advertised to owners and said, if you have a dog that howls to a specific piece of music or siren, would you consider doing a home-based experiment? And we will send you that sound that you tell us they howl to in a form that's shifted up or down in pitch. And you take videos of the dog howling to the different versions. And then we analyze the acoustics and see if the dog is actually adjusting its pitch in relationship to what it hears.
All right. Okay. So before we go into the results of this little experiment, you sort of recruited dog owners whose dogs naturally howl. And then you got them to play the song that they normally howl to, and you changed it a bit to see if the dogs would then reharmonize the new pitch. Is that the idea?
That's right.
Okay.
We've shifted it up or down and then to see if the dogs would adjust their own pitch.
Okay, very good. And so the dogs themselves, were they trained to do this, or were they not trained, or did that matter?
No, this is not a trained behavior we see. This is what's partly so interesting, is that it's a sort of a spontaneous response to certain sounds and this kind of impulse to join in. And to us, that was very intriguing, because that's also what you sort of see with human music, is even people with no musical training will often sing along to a favorite song. It could be in the car, it could be at a pub, it could be, you know, doesn't have to require formal training.
Hmm.
So there's that impulse to join in. And then when you do join in, there's some impulse to coordinate your voice and your pitch with other people. So that's a neat parallel to what we see in the dogs as well. And I should mention, we specifically focused on what are called ancient breed dogs. These are dogs that share more genetic similarity to wolves than the modern breeds.
Why did you choose those?
Because the original observation about this pitch adjustment came from observations of wolves in the wild.
Okay.
So we thought we'd stay closer to dogs that shared more genetic similarity to wolves,
rather than pugs, which I guess makes sense. Okay. So, the sort of songs that people, that these dogs sang to, I mean, I don't know how many clips or of music you got, but was there a certain genre that the dogs thought sounded like a howl? Like, I mean, one might say K-pop is not something that would match, but, you know, rock maybe, or country and western?
Well, we saw a wide variety of genres. We saw EDM. We did see a rock. We saw classical in one case. The song that we used as an example for the paper, which is open access, so anybody can look at this paper and look at a video and see an example, is Shallow by Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. So
we have to hear that. I think we have a clip. Yeah. Hang on.
Yeah.
It goes on like this for quite some time, in case you're wondering. So in this particular clip, this is like a wolf-like sort of a dog howling along to Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. And in this, the dog is observed shifting. Did you see the dogs trying to match the pitch as the song? Because you gave them a version of this song, which is pitched down and pitched up for them to play to see if the dog changed. Is that right?
That's right. So in that clip you just played, it started off with the lower pitched version. And then after about 15 seconds, it switched to the higher pitched version. And maybe you could hear the howls towards the end were higher up than the ones in the beginning.
I mean, yeah. I guess you have a way of like scientific, because it just sounded like howling to the layperson. But I guess you had a way of determining what pitch that was, and you measured that it was higher.
Yes, that's okay. We use acoustic computer software to measure the pitch of the howls and showed that three out of the four Samoyed dogs that we tested raised their pitch when the music went higher, and one of them, interestingly, actually lowered its pitch slightly when the music went higher.
To harmonize, almost.
Yeah, so, you know, it's kind of seems like they're trying to come into some sort of relationship with the music.
So, look, when we're talking about one dog out of a group of four, I'm just wondering how much confidence do you have in that sort of data that it lowered its pitch? I mean, could it not just been randomly? I was going to make a gag about being able to determine whether or not it was a dog howl or Lady Gaga, but actually, I love that song. I love that song, so I'm not going to take a cheap shot. But when it comes to the dog, like, if it's just one dog howling over one video, is that really significant data to make any assumptions on?
Right. Yeah, no, so we saw all four Samoyeds change their pitch significantly, and we used statistical tests to show that they really were reliably changing their pitch. They weren't just kind of randomly howling higher or lower. And three of them went up when the music went up, and as you said, only one went down. So if we only see one dog doing that, we don't know how common that is. It was quite a strong effect for that particular dog, but we'd have to test more dogs to see if that's an aberration for this behavior, or if that's, you know, some dogs just like to go into a different relationship with the music or with what they're howling to.
Right.
And there's that theory that, you know, some dogs are doing this, the wolves do it partly to detune from what they're hearing to sound like a larger pack. So perhaps some dogs are going for that. Other dogs are going for the more social, like let's try and kind of do it for unification reasons rather than territorial advertisement reasons.
Yeah. When you said about, you know, dogs wanting to deharmonize to sound like a louder pack, I mean, in theory, that sounds cool, but I'm always a bit skeptical of people sort of doing a bit of evo psych, you know, and coming up with a theory to match the data. I'm wondering, do you know about that particular study where they were looking at the wolves? I mean, what other suggestions or what other evidence is there that they're deharmonizing to sound like a larger pack? I mean, it sounds like a great idea, but, you know.
Right. I think that idea came from biologists who were studying wolves in the field. They knew how many wolves were in the pack. And then they would listen to them howl, doing these territorial howls, and, you know, and try to estimate how many they were hearing. And it would come out to be more than you would, you know, the actual number of wolves. And so it seemed like it was this way of creating this acoustic effect of a larger size than was actually there.
But what about parrots? I mean, don't parrots sing along?
Parrots will sometimes imitate songs, yes.
Yeah.
This is part of what's interesting about the dog and why this study was, I think, had an interesting point to make, was that dogs are, they don't imitate complex sounds. They're not like parrots. So they have, they're thought to have mostly instinctive vocalizations like wolves. So the fact that they can do this sort of adjustment suggests that the ability to modulate pitch and come into some sort of relationship with others doesn't depend on some of these more complicated mechanisms for imitating sounds that you need for speech, for example. So this is why we think this could be quite ancient in its roots before even speech evolved.
I mean, whales sing, right? But that could just be how they communicate. And I guess, you wrote a book about this, music, language, and the brain, right? So what is the thinking about what makes the difference between, you know, what we would call singing and what we would call purely communication? Like for a wolf to howl,
right?
How do we know that that's just not them trying to communicate, or is there any way of separating communication from actual playful or, you know, musical type communication? And do we see that elsewhere in the animal kingdom beyond maybe just, you know, mating displays?
Yeah. So, I mean, the wolf howl is thought to be a communicative signal for sure. And, you know, whether or not you call it singing, I think it depends on what you think singing is. They don't learn their vocalizations. Whales do, you know, they're more like parrots. They learn these complicated sequences of sounds by listening and imitating. But really from a biological standpoint, it's about what ability is at play here to make the behavior possible.
Mm.
So, in the case of the dogs or the wolves, it seems to be, an ability to listen and to adjust in relationship to things that you're hearing, and to be able to do that in the absence of more complicated vocal learning abilities or sound imitation abilities. So it seems like a kind of maybe a first step towards developing the more complicated kind of sound imitation abilities we see in parrots and whales.
But wouldn't we see, I mean, if this goes back to an ancestor of both dogs and humans, which is, you know, obviously if we both vocalize and harmonize our voices, that's, I guess, what we're kind of hinting towards, that there's some sort of, evolutionary thing back to a previous ancestor. Wouldn't we see this everywhere in mammals?
Well, okay, that's a very good point. I'm glad you raised that. So it's not actually, we're not making the claim that this is because dogs and humans have a common ancestor that did this. Dogs and humans are very distantly related from a genetic and evolutionary standpoint.
Yeah.
Humans are actually more closely related to rodents than we are to dogs. And they have independently developed large brain size and complicated, social systems and so forth. So it's more of what biologists call convergent evolution. So it's the independent acquisition of a trait by distantly related animals.
And
in the case of dogs, presumably they have it because wolves use have it for functional reasons. And so again, getting back to this issue of the ability, perhaps in our case, we use this ability now for music, for art and so forth. But it could have had roots in sort of more functional behaviors.
Right. I see. So we may have just made it more sophisticated because of the way human beings exploded intelligence and it became something else. But maybe originally it was a way of signifying the strength and size of your pack.
Exactly. Or reuniting the pack or something like that. Yes, exactly.
Right. And this is a massive question that you really shouldn't, if you're in any way decent interviewer, end on, because the answer is far reaching. But in one word, do we know why music has become such an enormous part of the human experience? I mean, why it is so prevalent and found across every culture, region, hidden societies, all that sort of stuff. Why music is so prevalent when it doesn't seem to form a major part of the mating ritual or display sort of activities that we would expect?
Yeah, this is a question that goes back to Darwin. He thought it had its roots in that sort of mating behavior and became really...
Did he? Okay.
...culture, and that's why it's stuck with us. And then But if you look at it today, it's used for all kinds of purposes, right? I mean, music is used for profoundly important in rituals all over the world, in religion, in dance, in soothing and arousing infants. Mm. So it just seems to have an ability to stick and for memorizing information, for remembering things, and of course for evoking strong emotions. So it seems to be valued for a wide variety of reasons and just persists in every culture we know of.
So Darwin felt it was to get laid, essentially, which I suppose, you know, almost everything starts off that way if you're Charles Darwin and looking around the world back of the day on the boat. That was wonderful. Thank you so much for your time. Dr. Ani Patel is a professor of psychology at Tufts University, and he's the author of Music, Language and the Brain. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae,
proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.